If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Adam Weiner with the Baseball Insiders here with three-time MLB All-Star Curtis Granderson and collector and spokesman Samuel Evans on behalf of the Youth Collector Clubs Initiative powered by the National Sports Collectors Convention. We've got some amazing details to go over in a little bit. I can't wait to ask you both about it. And I know, Curtis, that you guys are collaborating on a launch event on July 10th. I'd love to know what inspired you to get involved in the initiative and explore the joys of collecting, as well as a couple of details on that event.
Well, the biggest inspiration is I was a card collector myself, maybe not as intense as some people have been, but my parents still have a bunch of cards back in the basement right now that eventually are going to come to me, and I got to figure out what I want to do with them next. And I sit here and have cards right here, you know, just kind of standing, you know, there's just always cards around you in some form or fashion. And the idea when it was brought up about how do you couple that in with the kids getting so much more excited to it where they are now? And then my nonprofit, the Chicago Baseball Educational Academy, CBEA, it was just a perfect fit. We use baseball and sport and softball to get kids on a college campus to then go ahead and show them about what other opportunities could be made where for them. But those same baseball kids and softball kids, some of them are already collecting. Some of them are thinking about their next steps. Some of them are looking at starting their own business. And what greater way to do that is with this initiative that Samuel and his team have been able to put together. So I thought it was a perfect fit. Plus, the National Card Convention is going to be here in Chicago for 3 years. And it's like, all right, now we can get a group in. We can get them started. We can introduce them, get them excited, and see the fruits of their labor over the course of time.
Yeah, this is just a foundation. That's what stood out to me. And it's all about, you know, collecting and investing. And Samuel, that is such a complicated process, but sometimes you make it look so easy. Tell us a little bit more about the initiative from the Nationals side of things. I know it's aimed at teaching children and young athletes the life lessons from the world of collecting sports cards. So what life lessons are you channeling, you know, from the card collecting perspective, and how will you be taking the momentum from the launch event through the National and then obviously in the years to come back in Chicago next summer too?
So just to like step back, like when I came into the hobby in the middle of the global pandemic, you know, I learned the landscape of the hobby and I saw what was happening around the hobby. And there was this huge emphasis on like money and how much cards are worth. And I just felt like something was missing. And it made me really think back to my days when I was collecting. It was about community. And I was, these thoughts and these ideas was just running through my head. And it's been so awesome just having the opportunity to partner with the National and to bring to life, these ideas that I've been having in my head over the past 4 years. And to your point, like this program and this initiative, it has four pillars. And those pillars are entrepreneurship, industry, community, and the hobby 2.0. And in each pillar, there's this like real focus on, you know, exposing students and the new aspiring collectors to certain entrepreneurial skills, getting them like to understand the other side of collecting, which is the industry, the creative side, the interpersonal skills that they will learn. And then this idea of like cultivating community, because that's why we all collect. That's why I came back to the hobby in the middle of a global pandemic, just wanting to be around a community of people. And then the last pillar, just this idea of like access. How can we make the hobby more inclusive and deepen its reach? And then when you tie in the other three pillars, it just exposes our aspiring collectors to just new ideas, new initiatives to allow them to tap into their talents and their abilities and say, you know what? I can create cards. No, I have this idea of like how I want to pitch a new product design. You know what? I have this idea of how I could start an online business. And it just opens up these avenues for them to, one, be kids, but also think about the next step and how they could potentially like monetize off this.
Curtis, I know you're getting things started at Curtis Granderson Stadium at the CBEA headquarters at the University of Illinois on July 10th. There's a launch event with about 50 high school age kids kicking off this curriculum with a card trading 101 lesson. You are an expert already. Like you said, you pulled out cards. I think I saw 68 tops in there, which like most of us don't just have hanging around. But what lessons do you feel like you're going to be able to impart on these kids when they take that 101 lesson with you in the foundation?
I think Samuel brought up a good point. I mean, the entrepreneurship side of things is so, there's so many options and ways that a kid can do for themselves. Independency is a huge thing, and especially when you're a young kid, you're trying to find your own space in your own lane. And if you rewind back to the three of us when we were younger and we were into card collecting, most likely we were probably having to go to a shop, go to an event, go to a convention, or go to the store to pick up the cards, hopefully get something, maybe meet with our friends. And the great thing about things now, these kids are growing up in a space where they have so much touch and reach outside of the kids in their neighborhood. They can literally communicate with people all over the world and show how exciting it is just to engage, see how the value has moved up or down, see where something is more desirable than other areas. I mean, just using baseball as a, the backdrop of it, because that's of course where I'm in. Of course, East Coast versus West Coast, the Yankees versus the Mets, Chicago's home for me, Cubs versus White Sox. Like, there's a different dynamic. Something that could be valuable to you might have a different meaning to somebody else, or it could be the last piece they're trying to collect to finish a set. So I'm excited about that side of things because I remember just the intrigue and interest that it was for me, and just putting kids in that space for it right now, because a lot of that interest is already there in other aspects of it. I mean, Samuel and I talked about this. There's a good chance a kid has either collected rocks, collected flowers, collected bugs, collected sands from a beach, and tried to get as many different options. Maybe try to add a little bit of creativity to it and see, okay, how can I monetize this? Whether it's the fruit that I picked up and I'm going to go ahead and do lemonade, whether it's these rocks that I painted and I want to bring them to you. And here's another way to be able to do it and just continue to expand on it. And who knows what that may end up moving towards to the future, whatever other business interests is that they end up having to bring up.
I got to talk to some of these kids because I got a bug collection I don't know what to do with too. So
There
this
you
is
go.
valuable for me. I got to get out from under this weight of my bug collection. Reminder too that Pristine Auction is thrilled to have been chosen to work with the Curtis Granderson Foundation's charity auction, which starts July 14th and runs through August 4th. The auction coincides with the National Sports Collectors Convention and will include some amazing collectibles and experiences that will be available exclusively through pristineauction.com. And the 45th National, Samuel, is going to have a 30% larger footprint than the previous year and 650,000 square feet, 20% more space for vendors. And like we said, this is year one in Chicago of three. We're laying the foundation from the convention's perspective. These kids are going to be learning about investing. They're probably going to be going to the National to try to figure out, okay, what's a good investment? What's a smart next move for me? What are you thinking in terms of, what products do you feel like are about to be the best investments at the National? Which sports cards are the most teachable to you? Is it the Bowmans? Is it the current MLB superstars? What are you focusing on there?
I mean, well, the two king crops of collecting is football and basketball. Those are the products that are like, you constantly see people trading and buying for it. They have a lot of liquid value. I also think baseball is on the rise. But the interesting thing that I like about the National, and this will be my second National going, my first time in Chicago. This diverse portfolio that you can build, especially if you are someone who wants to get into selling cards. And there's an opportunity for each sport, because the reality is there's someone out there that likes that sport or like that player or like that team. So there's this diverse pool that you can go down. But oftentimes in shows like the National or the more regional shows that are connected to the National, you see those big sales with basketball and football cards.
And I know, Samuel, that you got a Philly background too, diverse sports scene there, and you got an educational background. I'm wondering sort of the kids you work with every day, are Philly sports sort of like the dominant voice in the classroom? You got to think with the Eagles, coming off the Super Bowl. Or are you seeing kids bandwagon a little bit more? Like sometimes I can't tell where the fandom is these days.
No, it's very interesting you bring up that point, especially the various spaces that I've been as an administrator and a teacher. Oftentimes, you see the diehard Philly fans across the major sports, but every once in a while, there's this sprinkle of like, I'm a Cowboys fan or I'm a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, and I'm like, you live in Philadelphia. Like, how are you a Cowboys fan or a Pittsburgh Steelers fan? And a lot of that is just traditional. Like, they were brought up around that environment where their father, their uncle, their grandfather were these diehard fans outside of, the traditional Philly teams. But it brings for a lot of conversation as an administrator. It's another way to connect with students. And then, me in my office, I have some of my sports card collection in my office, and they're seeing those cards and they become intrigued. And then when you bring them into the school, it just opens up this world that a lot of them knew about. They collect, but they're in a closet about it. And now they have this safe space to like cultivate community and be their authentic selves. And that's the great thing that I love about the hobby. It gives you an opportunity to be your authentic self. Yourself, and then it allows you just bridge that gap with people your age or people who are not your age who all love collecting.
And that's the next step. I think we're going to see a lot of kids be their authentic selves this summer for sure. And while basketball and football might be the pillars of the collecting community, Curtis, I got you here. I think we got to talk a little baseball because, man, we are approaching a wild summer, a wild trade deadline. Got started in mid-June. Rafael Devers moved from the Red Sox to the Giants. You might not see a more seismic move than that all year. I love your initial reaction on Boston, Craig Breslow, and ownership, or whoever's most responsible, actually daring to pull the trigger there and send Devers to San Francisco immediately after sweeping the Yankees, which I still can't wrap my mind around any of this.
It's interesting because the question before kind of segues in this perfectly because there are people that grow up loyal to the region that they're from or the team that they just happen to be a part of. And the one thing about it's definitely baseball specific, it is a very regional sport. People from Philly like the Phillies. And occasionally you might get a little bit of stretch just because of proximity to the New York market and, of course, the Pirates market and so on. But it tends to be that. And it's very similar in the other sports with basketball and football and any, the universities and all those different spaces. But the one thing that's so unique is if a player moves, whether it's a free agency decision or a trade, like in this case. So a lot of times when a player decides to leave in free agency, you see a lot of mixed emotion. People will go ahead and get rid of their memorabilia, that jersey, possibly that card. This might be a hot item. Let me trade this, and I'm done with having Devers as a Red Sox card because he left us. This is a flip. The team has now decided to let them go. So it's very interesting. One, because he was mentioned as the Red Sox guy. He was going to be there for a long time, had a very long contract. Had done well in Red Sox, and he's so young. This isn't someone that's 38. This is someone that's 28 who is already a veteran presence and still has so much more baseball left. Now, it's interesting what the fans are going to decide to do on it, right? Is a Red Sox fan going to still be a Rafael Devers fan because now they're leaving? And I think they play here soon. I think they play here this weekend. So, who do you cheer for? Do you split the jersey in half already and go ahead and have Red Sox on one side and Giants on the other side? But I think that's also what makes it fun because if you are a collector, you will have your Red Sox cards and you can't wait for that Giants card to drop. So you can add it to the mix and see where things are. And I think that's going to be the cool side about, one, these kids that happen to be fans or even not, you start to see how things can change quickly in the ebbs and flows and how you have to stay on top of it and just understand the education behind of it. Like, wow, player A was with this team. this card was very valuable. Now player A has now moved. Is this market better? Is it worse? Are they playing better? Are they not? Like all these different things. And oh yeah, maybe now I'm a fan of this team. I didn't know about these players on this team, but because I'm gonna follow of someone I'm a fan of, now I get to learn about a new teammate, a new manager who may have played before, a front office person who was a World Series champion like a Buster Posey. So all those different things it opens up, and I think it makes it very interesting. But from a baseball standpoint, in this 2025 season, I'm not sure if we're going to see a bigger blockbuster trade, but never say never. The deadline is still there in front of us, and we aren't even at the All-Star break yet.
I want to ask about to a player who you want to talk about investing. I remember so clearly buying up 2005 Bowman draft, maybe regular Bowman Chrome, trying to get my Justin Verlanders, trying to get those first Bowman first signatures. Now he's on that Giants team, kind of closing out his career in the NL West, but you came up with Verlander. You played with him when you were both kids. What was it like to you coming up with a young Verlander? What'd you see? You know, were you able to sort of appreciate greatness at that time? And what's it been like watching him over his whole career to this point?
So the next year, 2006, he makes the team. I make the team. My roommate Joel Zumaya makes the team. And I remember Jim Leland, first year manager for the Tigers, was asked, "Why are you bringing these young players up to the big leagues so early?" He goes, "They both throw 100. I'm not leaving that in the minor leagues. They're coming with me." And that's how the career started with both of them. At that time, my roommate Zumaya was throwing 104. So we get hyped and excited about that. Now he was doing that 20 years ago. And Verlander did some things that were so amazing then. His 100th pitch of a game would be 100 miles an hour. So one, just the strength and stamina, but two, just the ability and the longevity that he's been able to put together on the multiple different teams that he's played for, the different individual awards, the team awards, accord. It's just awesome to go. But it shows just what he's been able to do from a work ethic to continue to stay in the game for as long as he has.
Does he crack your Mount Rushmore of teammates? And do you have a big four-headed Mount Rushmore, the best teammates you ever played with?
If I'm going best in terms of talent wise, yeah, he's definitely got to be in the mix. Jeter's up there. If I got to go the next two, I'd probably say Miggy. And then for icon purposes, Ichiro. Being a part of that when that trade happened, we're in Seattle playing against them. He gets traded. He walks over, switches, puts a Yankee uniform on, and I'm the first person that got to throw with him in a Yankee uniform. So that's just a very iconic and memorable moment for me. But again, someone like Devers' situation, there are diehard Ichiro fans that have loved Seattle because of him and only because of him. And now he moves, and now he's on this other team, and he's playing his first game is in Seattle wearing New York grays, not the pinstripes. So again, you got to be looking at it. When am I going to get an Ichiro pinstripe uniform card so I can add that to the collection? Just makes it so cool.
Yeah, the
I will
same.
never forget.
Same,
Yo, go ahead.
No, the same thing happened when Ohtani left the Angels,
Right.
and he went to the Dodgers. Everybody, when a flag Topps flagship came out, everybody was looking for that variation, like update card of him
Right.
and his new uniform. So, and the same thing happens in basketball. Oftentimes when they make those basketball cards, the traded cards, they still have them in their old uniform, but you might have a icon that says traded on top, but the following year you get them in a new uniform. So
I
very
mean,
nostalgic.
we're talking about the hobby. Like, Samuel, I don't think it's going to be this year that we see Paul Skeens get traded, but we are talking about it. And it's going to be a topic of conversation at the deadline, even though the Devers thing stole the thunder a little bit. In terms of collecting purposes, are you rooting for someone to eventually take Paul Skeens out of Pittsburgh? Is there like an additional ceiling for Skeens stuff? I mean, obviously, it's going nuts at this moment, regardless, but. Are you watching Skeens in Pittsburgh kind of get wasted, thinking, man, if we could just get this guy to the Dodgers or the Yankees or the Mets or wherever that ceiling's just a little bit higher? I'd love your perspective on that.
I'm not one to like I have not been following the whole Paul Scheme's situation and scenario, but what I can say, something that Curtis said, the hobby is a very like data heavy market. And that's the great thing about having a lot of data within a hobby, because it allows you to make an informed decision and allows you to think critically about how the day-to-day impacts the hobby. Now, when I collected in the 90s, we wasn't thinking that way. It was about this was the player, he was the most popular. We wanted to be like Mike. Penny Hardaway was on our mind. Everybody wanted to, be like Ken Griffey Jr. because he was the kid and he had the greatest swing in the world. So like that's what drove our collecting, the psychology side. But now, fast forward 20 plus years later, you seeing kids like really understand the data in that day to day. And that's something that has really like helped me understand, this modern world of collecting. And it's fun, and it's fun, and it's intriguing to see the ticker come across your screen when a player gets traded, and then you go to eBay and you see how it either brings its prices up or down. And it's very intriguing to look at the hobby through that lens of like it just being a very data heavy space to be in.
That's what I was gonna say. Like back in the day, you're just following goats. But now, as you're talking to these kids and teaching them how to invest and talking them through the nuances, I guarantee you're gonna get kids who are gonna report, like, man, we gotta get Skeens out of Pittsburgh. Like, I gotta add 15%. I gotta juice up whatever this, first year chrome is. That's what's gonna be so exciting about this. And moving forward, the change of scenery, the uniqueness of some of these cards, and just the level of data that these kids are using and operating with. Curtis, I do have to ask, because you mentioned changing uniforms, superstars moving side to side, maybe even superstars joining the pinstripes or giving them up. We saw Juan Soto make a similar move to the one that you made this offseason, going from the Yankees to the Mets. You and I have even talked a little bit on the show in the past about how, the Yankees are such a global brand, the Mets are such a New York brand, and all of a sudden, like, maybe the interest isn't quite so national in terms of the collecting space, or maybe it is because the animosity between the two sides has increased. Do you expect that animosity to go away and Soto to eventually return back to being just a superstar in Queens? Do you think Yankee fans are maybe overreacting a little bit here, or are we going to see this bubbling up for the rest of his career?
Well, I do think, in the collection space, it is slightly different from baseball to the other ones, because you take the name and you've used it, superstar, and Juan Soto, superstar, and Shohei Ohtani, and the fact that they move teams, both of them roughly in the same city per se, Anaheim to LA, Yankees to Mets, and the value just does this, right? One way or the other. Supposedly Soto's value has gone down, obviously Shohei's has gone up. But if you look at some of the other sports, like if you take the Greek Freak with Giannis in Milwaukee, he's exactly that, the Greek Freak, right? And Milwaukee is a city, it's obviously much smaller than New York and LA and Chicago and a bunch of other places in between. But you can take a player in these other sports and they can just be dominant in the city that they play in because the superstar them rides the wave. Now, of course, they can benefit a little bit here and there, but you look at just some of the greats. I would assume if Michael Jordan would have left the Bulls and had gone to Cleveland, just to say, I think Michael Jordan's pedigree would still continue to move along the space. Now, could it have even eclipsed if he had gone to the Knicks or the Celtics or the Lakers? We never know. But bringing that back to where Soto is from a playing standpoint, I do think when you do switch teams and markets like that, there are some adjustments that you just have to make internally. And some of those things that you just don't always calculate in, like one, how do I get into the stadium? I know that seems simple, but as a visiting player, you always come this way, come this way. Now I'm the home player. I got to get in. Where do I go? How's things at? The city, things just look a little different and just getting acclimated. Plus, there's a certain pressure that comes with one, the value of the contract, and two, the market. And I honestly do think that's part of the reason why Ohtani didn't go east. You can do some things and get away with some stuff out west that you can't get away with out east. And I think that has helped make his ease and comfort a lot better. Whereas if you sign with the Yankees or Boston or the Mets, They're on you day one. And you got to get through that. The good thing is his contract is so long. I think he's just going to be fine. I think his numbers are going to be there where they are at the end of this year and many years to come.
Yeah, that is the correct, like Yankees, Mets. Maybe there's a difference between the two fan bases, but the one thing they share, they are on you when
Day
they're
one, we saw it with Devin Williams this year. I mean, first outing, they're already on him. It's like, whoo, and now he's still trying to get back into it.
Well, Curtis Samuel, before we sign off, I am curious about your collections. Samuel, is there one card after all this investment advice? Like, do you have one card that's just so PC and so meaningful to you that if a kid was like, "Well, how would you sell that?" You'd be like, "That one's off limits. Actually, I have no advice on that. I'm gonna keep it."
So I would say this. I am not a investor. I am a collector at heart. All of my cards I keep. I actually give away cards on my Instagram account to kids because I just believe every card deserves a home. And a hobby is a space and place where like we cultivate it and it thrives through giving back. But I'm a to and through. I'm a Wilt Chamberlain collector. I think he's the greatest basketball player of all time. Philadelphia native, so I don't want to start any debates on who's the basketball goat because I know a lot of people love MJ, but I just look at it a different way when I think about, guys like Wilt Chamberlain. So, when it comes to his cards and my PC, and I collect basketball, baseball, and hockey. I'm not a football collector. Way too many positions and players, and just too much stuff to understand. But those three sports are special to me because they're connected to my childhood. But Wilt Chamberlain is the one for me. I have his rookie card. I have all his important cards through his playing days, and I have some fun modern cards of him as well.
Wilt's incredible. Curtis, do you have a card that's especially meaningful to you or a collection that you sort of pursue and you're like, I'm not selling that. That's just for me.
Well, one of them was actually kind of in what Samuel does, right? He's a collector, but there are some cards he does give away depending on what he has. And I have to say thank you. I still don't remember exactly who this individual was, but two collectors out there because they provided the one card I had been in search of and said, "Hey, I heard you were looking for it. Here you go." So I was a big Ken Griffey Jr. fan, and that 89 Upper Deck rookie card was the one that I had never been able to collect and get into my group of cards. And like Sammy with the Wilts, I had a bunch of the other ones. And then all of a sudden, the fan sent it to me. "Hey, I heard that was your favorite player. Here you go." I was like, ah. So I got it. And it's definitely one that I just love to have. I mean, even to this day in my parents' house, there is a framed 8x10 photo with the little card inside up on the wall of Ken Griffey Jr. back from when I was in grade school or high school. It's still on there today. I'm 44 years old talking to you right now. So that was definitely one of the iconic, most memorable cards to not only search for, but then actually get. And that's definitely one I'll hold on to.
I'll
Well,
give you an
Curtis.
extra one. I got one. I got six of them at home, so I'll bring you one when
Nah, hold on. I got my one. I'm good with the one I needed right now. But
Wait,
hey, I mean, that was a
I don't have any. Yeah, I don't have any. Can I?
I'll give you one, Adam. I'll give you one.
Spend the wealth.
I got three graded ones, and I have about four. I think three or four raw ones, and I've actually given that card away to someone as
So it might have
well.
been Samuel that gave me that card before I even knew.
This is already, hey, whether I get the card or not, this has already been one of the most fruitful interviews I've ever done. So, Curtis and Samuel, you are about to set a bunch of kids on that trajectory, learning who their guys are, learning how to play the market and learn from the market. Curtis, where can we go if we want to learn more information about the foundation, its events, and this big summer?
So the easiest way, we got a bunch of letters flying around. My nickname, the Grandy Man, thegrandyman.com. You can check it out, see everything we're doing with CBEA, the Curtis Granderson Foundation, all baseball things in general. But super excited, just one, to get these kids on a college campus, two, introduce them to the great hobby of collecting, like Samuel said, hobby 2.0, and then just open up those doors for them moving forward. And a big thanks to, the National coming to Chicago and wanting to connect with us, and Pristine Auction House for wanting to go ahead and continue to raise funds to help support this initiative. So for anyone out there that's a big collector and interested in education and baseball and softball, great way to support. Come on, check us out, and let's continue to get the next group of kids excited about it.
Amazing. And Samuel, if anybody wants to follow you for more and learn more about the National, where can they go?
Well, you can follow me on Instagram, the Sports Car Collector, but also go to the national website. It's going to be in Chicago for the next 3 years. I'm excited to see where this initiative goes because, just thinking long term to see something like this in every major city across America as the national goes to those different cities after his 3 year stand in Chicago will be powerful, and to see kids explore, think critically and go to the other side of collecting, because oftentimes people say, oh, it's just cardboard. Well, there's this other side of it. There's the community, there's the connectiveness, and there's that nostalgia that we can all participate in and engage in, especially during these days when we're living in such a polarizing time. And I think it's important for us to come together as a community and find some common interest to help connect us.
Well, Curtis Granderson, Samuel Evans, in terms of common interests, this is a pretty good one. I stand behind it. And thank you so much for all your hard work and all the amazing things you're going to do for kids this summer.
Thank you.
Thank you.